नान्त्वा गणपते गुं हवामहे कविं कवीनामुपमश्रवस्तमं ज्येष्ठराजं ब्रह्मणां ब्रह्मणस्पत आनश्रृण्वन्नुतिभिः सेदसातनम् ॐ श्रीमहागणपतये नमः सदाशिवसमारम्भां शङ्कराचार्यमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्तां वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम् ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। सर्वोपनिषदो गावः दुग्धा गोपालनन्दनः पार्थो वत्ससुधीर्भोक्ता दुग्धं गीतामृतं महत्। So we've been looking at the 10th chapter, and Shri Krishna said what he had to say, just like in the second chapter. Shri Krishna taught, he finished speaking, then Arjuna asked, because there Shri Krishna talked about mostly about jnanam. So then Arjuna asked about the sthitapragya, sthitapragyasya ka bhasha, samadhistasya keshava, like this. And then Shri Krishna went on and explained about the sthitapragya. So here also he discussed, he talked in general about his glories, that his vibhutis, anything that you see, any special glory here, really belongs to him, as we've been discussing. I think I can do something very well, then I have to remember this is Ishvara's vibhuti. It's like the wave thinks I'm a very special wave, I have a wonderful, unique form. The wave now, before you know it, that form is gone because it changes or it merges into the water. So my pride of what I do is going to go down because I see it's Ishvara's. Same when I see somebody else doing something magnificent, somebody that's belonging to me from my circle, oh, very nice. Somebody belonging to the other circle, and who, the one in my circle, my family member, friend, or who I'm a fan of, isn't, you know, can't stand up to them, then maybe I'm jealous or something like this. Then I'll see Ishvara Vibhuti. What's there to be jealous? Everything is Ishvara Vibhuti. All the waves belong to the ocean. So he discussed about this. And also Shri Krishna discussed about the bhakta, the different types of bhaktas, and specifically here pointing out about the aneka rupa Ishvara bhakta, as we said, the medium tier. What happens first here, I go, and we all have probably gone through this some level in religion. You go to the temple, you feel there's a nice presence there. Or at a certain time, the time when you're doing puja, there's a nice presence. So there's Ishvara in a certain limited place, right? That place. Then, slowly you see, hey, that presence that you feel there, isn't that presence in other places too? Maybe it's more apparent there, but that same presence, where is it? If it's limited to there, it's only a specific limited thing, but I see, hey, it's behind each and everything, then becomes aneka Ishvara bhakti. I start looking and seeing that God is behind each thing. At first, behind certain things, because they're more conducive, maybe I like them more, maybe they're more uplifting, but then slowly I have to see them in and through everything, right? And in and through each thing, that same presence will be there. This is one thing that theologies have a problem with, is they have a problem that when they have a hell, then the hell is the negative, the evil, right? And the heaven is the positive. So there is godliness in the heaven, but then the hell, the God can't go there, right? Because it's negative. So now the God is limited. God has a certain area, has a certain place. He doesn't get a visa to go there, right? any passport we have, there are some places where that you can't get into because you can't get a visa for that country. Any passport in the world, there'll be some limitation like this, right? In this way. So what my guru did when he saw this problem, he said the problem is in the human mind. He said there's a border between the countries, border between Canada and USA. Right? Used to be like no border, now it's different, things change. Then, when the bird flies from one to the other, it goes north in the summer, south in the winter, does anybody ask for its passport? Right? Anybody ask questions? Are you carrying anything? Where are you going? Why are you going? So he said, it's only in our mind that line. So he learned to fly and flew planes to places that were having different fighting or scuffles between the countries in order to say, hey, you know, you can just go there. And he had a passport, real colorful passport that said, citizen of planet Earth, or something like this. So that passport, you can go everywhere. So the Ishwara's passport, everywhere. Not the hell also, Ishwara's there too. How can it be? Because that has to be behind, otherwise not Ishwara, otherwise some limited thing. Okay? So we have to see behind everything. Now what happens is, okay, that's the second level, third level. Now, this is at least, I thought of a long time ago. You do puja and you feel there's a nice presence there. But then slowly see there's a presence, but I'm also aware. How's that presence separate from my presence? Right? That presence is your presence, because otherwise, if it's separate, there's only one presence. So slowly, Aneka Ishwara Rupa Bhakti, so I see God is behind everything. What about what's behind me? The presence behind me, presence behind everything. So then becomes, right, Arupa, Arupa Bhakta or Jnanam, where I see there's no difference. What is separating internal world from external world? What is separating it? Can you find a border? Where's the border between me and between the world? It's like the border between this. I'll tell you what it's like. There's a nice talk, there are a few clips here and there, people had videoed years back with Swami Venkateshanandaji. Very brilliant disciple, Swami Shivananda. He wrote quite a few books. A few on Yoga Vasishta, he loved Yoga Vasishta. Very brilliant mind. So he was in the southern tip of Africa, the southern tip there. And then when he was there, somebody was pointing out, look, Swamiji, can you see right there? He says, what? I just see the water. No, there's the line there. This side is this ocean, that side is that ocean. Is it Pacific and Indian Ocean there? No, it's Atlantic and Indian Ocean, I think, like this. You see right there, that's the border between them. So that's how we see the separation. Where's the line? Imaginary line. Where's the line in me and world? It's an idea. The separation is an idea, like this. So then becomes the vichara to look into that. That's the vichara. So then to see there's just, not one, not many. As Swami Dayananji would say, that he would ask, so is in Hinduism, are there many gods or one God? And people say many, one, like this. They say, no, there's only God. So arupa, formless. What's behind everything? There's only. If you say one, then it's different. Because then there can be God and something else. But there's only that. So this much, in any case, so here talk more about the one who's discussing about the totality. So the one who is looking and seeing the one God behind everything. So after discussing this, now Arjuna has his questions to move things forward like this. So let's see his questions here. He's going to elaborate a bit before he actually asks, but that's okay. We finished that other verse last time. Number 12, yeah. Arjuna uvacha, Arjuna uvacha, param brahma param dhamaha, param brahma param dhamaha, pavitram paramam bhavan, pavitram paramam bhavan, purusham shashvatam divyam, purusham shashvatam divyam, adidevam ajam vibhum, adidevam ajam vibhum. So here he's saying, oops. Oh, they're put together. Let's read the second, the next one too. Ahustvam rishayas sarve. Ahustvam rishayas sarve. Devarshir naradas tatha. Devarshir naradas tatha. Asito devalo vyasaha. Asito devalo vyasaha. Svayam chaiva pravishime. Svayam chaiva pravishime. Arjuna asked, you are the Supreme Brahman, the Supreme Light, and Supremely Holy. All the sages, including the divine sage Narada, Asita, Devala, as well as Vyasa, speak of you as the Self of all, eternal, divine, primary God, birthless, and all-pervasive. You're also telling me. So here, Arjuna is starting to speak to him in order to ask the question, giving his alap before. The music, the alap warms everything up so you get into it and the music can flow. So you're also preparing the stage so the question will be asked and then Shri Krishna will be interested to answer. Because if somebody talked on something and then you just say, can you elaborate more on this? But you go more into detail, get them to see, show your interest, set the stage nicely, then of course the person's going to very much want to answer. You'll say, wow, this is very nice, this is a very interesting point. That was very interesting. This one thing I wasn't clear of and I want to hear more about, the teacher's going to be so much more excited to talk about it, right? Like this. So asking a question that, the time, place, everything, way that we ask is very important. Then we're going to get the answer better. Whether it's for a teacher or from something else too. From the spouse, the child knows how to come and ask the parent in the right time and place that they'll get what they want, right? So, in this way. So what is he saying? Param Brahma, he's addressing Shri Krishna, so he's saying Param Brahma, he's saying you, he's seeing how, noticing who Shri Krishna is, right, already. Next chapter he'll go into that a lot more. And Param Dhamma, the highest abode or highest refuge, like this. Pavitram Paramam, what is more purifying than this? Anything else that purifies you, but then only later on the purification can go away, like this. This is one thing in Hatha Yoga. Hatha Yoga, you practice yoga kriyas, which in our classes we'll do some of them. If you want to, please come, but some of you are far away. So, the yoga kriyas, it cleanses, so then you feel more in vitality. Energy is more open. Actually, traditionally, Hatha Yoga, you do that first. Then when you do asana pranayama, the nadis are more open. It'll flow even more. And you also get some more control over involuntary parts of the system, involuntary functions. It's very wonderful. But one even more importantly wonderful thing that you find when you do it, no matter how much you clean today, tomorrow it has to be cleaned again. Anything in the world you try to clean will be clean, but then after some time, again you have to clean. So, but something can get purified, something can't get contaminated like this. The interesting thing here, we're on earth and we have contamination of the earth, right? Somebody told me some years ago when saying about something organic, they said there's no such thing as organic fruits or vegetables anymore. You think it is, but there's too much contaminants. It's not organic. So in the earth, in the water, right? In very sad thing when you go and see the state in India, the rivers there, very sad to see. If you go higher up in the mountains towards the sources, it's clean, but anywhere further down, very sad. So the water is impure. And an interesting thing there, people go, let's say they go to Ganga, they go to the Ganga temple next to the Ganga. They do the worship of Mata Ganga, everything. Then they have stuff left over and they throw that garbage into the river. Meaning, the main thing, the idea is manifestation of the river is divine manifestation, but they just look at the symbol and forget that. Worshipping Ganesh and then Visarjanam, right? They paint it with all these colors. And before, the whole village would probably be one big deity, only made out of clay. You put it in, there's no problem. Now every household will want to have theirs. And with all this nice paint, what pollution is happening? So the water gets polluted. And the air gets polluted. Now, does the space get polluted? You'll say, oh yes, I've read that around the Earth there is lots of pieces left over from the different satellites that went out of commission, and that's garbage in the space. But that's Earth contamination, meaning solid contamination, because it'll disturb other satellites, other solid things. It's not going to touch the space. The space isn't touched by it. So space can't be contaminated. The space is always just space. Whatever's there, it's the same. So in the same way, we do different things for purification of mind as well. You know, the mind, we can have a system where the mind is more pure, that it's not as disturbed by things, doesn't have as much negativities. I see things positively. I'm more loving, I'm more patient, more accepting. All those things I can do. But still, the mind is movement. So mind can't be, there's no such thing as 100% pure mind. There'll be something there, but, you know, again, for not just for a sadhaka, anybody wants to have their mind more pure, they're going to be happier. So it's an important thing. But still, the mind can get agitated, can get impatient like this. It has the potential for it. It's possible for that to happen. Even in a pure mind, something, some agitation could be there. But in self, there's no. In the self, there can't be anything like this. So maybe, is that where he said holiest? Is that where he said in the translation? Yeah, supreme holy. So what is holy? Meaning uncontaminated. Can't be totally, perfectly pure. So people think of the God like this, but then they say the God is somewhere there, that one. Or then they say the one Son of God, right? Or the prophet, or the rishis. They're pure, but for me, I'm a, you know, born sinner, or whatever, however we want to say, I can't be. How can I be that? So here it says, no, you are that too. It's just, we're not aware of it. But that's where I find the full purity, only there. Like one thing I noticed, this is, in yoga practice. In our Shavasana, our Guru would talk about three levels of relaxation, the physical, the mental, and spiritual. And what happens is the physical, you can relax the body. But the body will never be 100% relaxed. It can be very, very relaxed, but it's impossible for it to be 100% relaxed. Otherwise, it'll be a stone. So impossible like this. The mind also can be very relaxed. Let's even say it's 100% relaxed sometime. But it'll change, some samadhi. Come out of samadhi, then again, there's movement in the mind. That has to be, it can't be fully relaxed. So physical and mental can be very relaxed, but it can't be completely because it's something changing. Spiritual relaxation, as sakshi, as atma, there it's full relaxation because there's, it's like space. We call it the chidakasha, space-like awareness. Like it's not space of, Chidakasha, so because we say there's physical space, bhutakasha, and then we say there's mental space, chittakasha, so in the mind, because you need space to have everything, so we'll say, okay, then when people say chidakasha, people think, oh, it's the space of awareness, but it's really space-like awareness, right? Akasha iva, like space, because otherwise, it would, again, with the moment you have space, you have dimensions and everything. So the consciousness, awareness is like space because everything appears within it, but it's not space. It's like space. It has similarity to space, like this. So there's no contamination. So he is saying, oh, Shri Krishna, you are that. Pavitram paramam bhavan, oh, Shri Krishna, Purusham, you are Purusha. Purusha is very nice. It has two meanings, which I think we saw before. One is Puranatvat. It is what is all-pervading, filling everything. Everything is within it, complete within itself, meaning all-pervasive. Other is purishayanat, something like this. It dwells within the body, within the nine-gated city. He has, as he said, Nangarit Siddhir comes later, earlier on in this thing, chapter 3, 4, talked about. He rests in the nine-gated city without causing to do or without instigating action or doing any action, something like this. But in any case, within this body, that which is indwelling within the body. Within the body, it's this one, and then the innermost. Now the interesting thing is, because we have both of those meanings, that one which is indwelling within is also all-pervasive. But you start with the within because that's where it is more readily available. Like the example that we have, you're explaining to a child about electricity. So where do I find electricity? Say, oh, you see the outlet here? Say, be careful, you don't play with it because it can hurt you. But if you take this little thing, you plug in, you see the light coming on. Now you know there's electricity. And here, look at this outlet, we push, plug it in, nothing comes in, meaning the outlet's not working, there's no electricity. So that's where it's readily available. But the electricity is not limited to that outlet, it's just readily available there. So here also, the Atma is all pervasive, but where is it readily available for me to find? Within me as the conscious being, within me. Then I can slowly, as I look into it, then I can find that it's not limited. In the Kartopanishad, it gives the example of Purusha Matra Purushaha, Angushta Matra, like the thumb. If you take the thumb and you put your hand around, this is like the size of your heart. So the heart is there, and it says the Atma is like that space, like that size within the heart. Meaning, as a upasana to start with, there's a small space in the heart within there. Now my Atma is there, I am there. When you say I, you point to yourself. Nobody says I and points to their head, right? Maybe some very intellectual person would, but even that person, we point to the heart because that's where I feel I am, interesting. So that's the place to start, like the outlet. So you start there. So the Purusha is there, the indweller is there, right? Innermost. But as you stay with it, slowly it becomes Trivikrama, right? The Vamana avatar, Vamana because tiny, Purusha Mataras, this tiny one. But then when you really look into it, it swallows everything. It swallows the external world, the internal world. It swallows the three, the Stula Sharira, Sukshma Sharira, and the Karana Sharira, like this. Interesting, the Puranic stories, a lot of them come from Vedantic concepts or come from Upanishads. But then the story stays, but not the meaning. Trivikrama, what seems to be a tiny little spark within me, really, when I look into it, it's the all-pervasive. So the Purusha, that which is within me, the center of my being, is really the all-pervasive. That's Lord Vishnu, like this. So that's Vamana Avatar. Is this. We are the Vamana Avatar, but we're still seeing the Vamana, we're not seeing the Vishnu. So here he's the Purusha. He's saying, you're O Purusha, Shashvatam, Shashvatam, eternal, I believe, right? So, and when saying eternal, this is a very interesting thing also when we say eternal, like this. That's not in here. So, what happens then is, when we think of eternal, I'm just saying if he connects it to another word, and Paramdhaparapavitram, no, we didn't even put it here, for that. Because sometimes they connect two words and in the commentaries, and it's important they go together like this, but here it seems not. So eternal, we think of a long time, that God is there for a long time, right? So the person will say, well, when did the God start? Oh, it didn't start. So now something that is there, like for instance, there's the time of the movie, right? The movie started, movie ended. Within the timeline of the movie, a few years, maybe 2 years happened. Sometimes they make a movie that literally it's just a few hours what happened. But usually the movie will span months or years. So there's the timeline of the movie. Now the projecting light. Where is that? Where does it fit within the timeline of the movie? Oh, no. It's eternal. Whenever a movie is there, it's there. Because it's not part of the timeline, it's outside the timeline of the movie. It's not, so it's eternal compared to the movie, it's eternal in this way. So the thing is, when mind is there, there's time. Without mind, you don't have time. Right? Moving to mind is time. Without that, where are you going to have time? This is interesting. When there's body, there's space. Imagine you didn't have a body. What would be space? Right? Your body of the dream, there was space of the dream. You drop the dream, where is the whole space of the dream? So when there's mind, there's time. No mind, like deep sleep, where is time? Now the consciousness is there before the mind. You know that because deep sleep, there's no mind, but you're there. So you're there when there's no mind also. So now what happens is the eternal means beyond time. Because if it's in and through the time, same always, meaning it's beyond time. So that's what the eternal is. Okay? So this is how, you know, not to think that it is something within. In one of the prayers they have, Lord Vishnu, Sahasra Yuga Dharine Namaha, the one who supports eternal eons, eternal ages, supports that which is beyond time, and like this. So you are eternal. Divyam, of course you are. The divine comes from saying div, to shine. And the thing is, so on the one you want to say divine, but what do you mean by divine? Right? What happens, div, to shine, it is what is self-luminous, self-shining. Because if you think of it, we're alive as an individual, I'm alive, but this is dependent on many things, right? Like some astronauts went to the space, they can, if they have to go out some spacewalk, in order to stay alive, they need, you know, they need a special suit and everything and oxygen to stay there. We need also here, you know, with slight different conditions, we couldn't be alive. That's why scientists, right, how they're searching for exoplanets will have the right condition. They say in the Goldilocks zone, right? Not too hot, not too cold, right? Not too, all these things. So the right distance from the sunlight. They took an interesting from story of three bears, then it becomes, it goes into science. But in any case, right conditions. Within these conditions, then, we'll be there. So I'm alive, but dependent. This life is the life is dependent on things. So it's not independent. I have the electricity here, the light is shining, but that's dependent on the grid. The grid is dependent on something else. Eventually dependent on the sun, let's say. Let's say it's coming directly from the sun, the power. The sun is self-luminous, relatively self-luminous. So then who's it borrowing from? Nobody. We're borrowing from there. So self-luminous, so the Paramatma, the Atma is self-luminous. Not everything else is dependent. And in the end, self-luminous will also be self-existent. If you're not self-existent, you're borrowing existence from somewhere else. Here talking about the consciousness principle. Consciousness principle is self-luminous. Awareness without depending on something else. So the mind is dependent on the consciousness to be there. That the consciousness, what can the mind do? But the consciousness itself doesn't depend on anything else, like this. So that he's saying, Divyam Adidevam, the primary first deva, meaning all the other devas, they are dependent on this one, right? We say Karana Devata. In the Purusha Sutta, it says like that, that before all the other deities came into being, the Purusha was there. Right? It says it like that. The exact word's not coming to my mind, but it says like this, this is the one that was there before they all come into being. So you say, so before there's the any other devata that's there, that one is there. So all of them come out of this then. They have the idea of Lord Vishnu sleeping and Brahmaji coming out. That's one way it's seen. But all these, the first like this. And Ajam, unborn, we saw that earlier also. Unborn meaning it's the cause. Because what'll happen is somebody will say, okay, there's the God, very good. God is everybody's father, right? God is everybody's, the ultimate father. Who's God's father? like this. Meaning, there must be some cause for it. You say the causeless cause. That's it. Like there's some president started here. The buck stops here. Wrote that on one U.S. president some generation ago. I don't remember who it is. Had on his desk, the buck stops here. Gets here, it'll be taken care of, finished. I'm not going to pass it on to somewhere else. Right? If the president has to pass it on, or Supreme Court has to pass it on, then what? But the president will pass it on to the advisors. The advisors will go to ChatGPT. ChatGPT will depend on the programmer. So you can still go somewhere. Right? But here, no. There's no cause, nothing after that, like this. So this one has to be beyond. So beyond, it has to be then beyond the cycle of cause and effect. Because there's the chain of cause and effect. If God is the first cause and then we say that's how we start with, Jagat Karanam, starts from there, everything comes from that. But then it gets a little bit trickier there because then, okay, so what makes it all come into being? That's the cause. Well, the previous karmas. So meaning really the karana sharira creates my karmas. All my previous things accumulate, start creating this. So meaning the unmanifest part manifests. There's my unmanifest karmas, which are sitting there, like batch of seeds, and at the right time certain fructifying my karmas here. This lifetime, certain karmas are fructifying, my prarabdha is manifesting. I finish this lifetime, then other ones will manifest, another lifetime like this. So the unmanifest part, which is the cause also, is changing because I'm putting new seeds in, right? Maybe I had more negative ones, now some more positive ones are getting added. Who knows, you know, something like this, it keeps going. So that part of the cause is part of the cycle of cause and effect. But this is what is behind both the cause, beyond cause and effect. But cause forever, the whole thing is going to be caused by this. So in this way. So it's the whole substance of everything, but it can't be part of the whole. Can't really manifest it. Everything's so unborn. Everything else is born. Anything else that exists came into being from somewhere else. So what is the absolute behind everything, it'll have to be this, right? And then vibhum is all-pervading. Oh, you are the all-pervasive, right? You are, because if the God is limited to somewhere, as we said, the God doesn't have the visa to go into the hell, then there's the problem, right? But in hell, is there sat? Yes, existence. Is there cheat? Yes, there's cheat. You'll say there isn't ananda, right? But you'll say there is ananda, just that it's more covered up, you don't see it, that's all. It's just that the sat, more covered, you don't see, which is a very interesting point that this I brought to our attention once, Swami Vidyatmanandaji, disciple of Swami Dayanandaji, who used to come here for talks, doesn't anymore, quite elderly. So he said that we're not looking for a sat or cheat, we're looking for ananda. That's what we're looking for. So that's why the idea of hell, ananda is more removed also, we can't find the God there. Yeah, it's true. Harder to see it, but still the same sat cheat is there. Ananda seems more covered, that's all, in this way. So, and the thing is, people think of the heaven and hell after death. But what about the heaven? But the heaven and hell we say are right here. Every day you go through some heaven, some hell, right? So we have to go to somewhere for it. So this is an interesting point. After, maybe there's something too, but guaranteed, any hell, there's going to be some heavenly thing there too. Any heaven, there'll be some, because some hell there too, there has to be some admixture. The moment it's manifest, it'll be a mixture. And in Mahabharata itself, it points it out. Duryodhana, right? You know the story when Yudhishthira left his body, because he went last of the brothers, he's gone, and then gets there, and then they say, yes, you can enter the heaven, right? He had the whole test with the dog going with him. And then he goes and he sees Duryodhana and Duryodhana's brothers there. He says, how can this be? How can he be in the heaven? What's this supposed to be? Where are my brothers? He goes, they're in the hell suffering. Right? Of course, because they said, these had some good karma, so they're going to enjoy some of it. These had some negative karma, so enjoys have to go through some hell. But most of the time these will be heaven, most of the time hell. So it shows there's no, and you can't totally 100% one or the other. Not possible. But in any case, so here all these different things he was saying about, so all pervasive, not limited to one place or the other, one experience or the other, what is always there. This is a very important thing. This is what is all pervasive is what is meaning spaceless. Brahman means spaceless, right? So spaceless, timeless, that's what it is. But because the subtlety, we don't notice it. That's why it says the rishis. Rishi can mean those who see, those who know, meaning those who have looked to the subtlest beyond just this limitation. So seeing beyond the limitation, that which is always there. But the thing is, this is so seems so thick and real, right? Such a great show as Maya's put on, the greatest show on earth. Greatest show not on earth, greatest show which earth is part of. Right? They say greatest show on earth. From when I was a kid, the Ringling Brothers Circus. That was always the logo. Greatest show on earth. This is even greatest show in the universe. The mind makes it seem so thick that we don't see just what's behind it. You see the show, you don't see just what's behind it. Right? The magician does something that has, some of them you don't know, they have the sleeves up like this. They have something, put in the hand, it's gone, and the sleeve, you know. And the sleeves, everything, where did it go? Right? Amazing how some of them do it. So then, meaning, they didn't really do magic. It's not real magic, just it appears that way. So we see the apparent and not what's actually behind it, like this. So it says, you are that which is spaceless, timeless. How is it? Ahuhu. Tuam Rishayaha Sarve, all the great saints, all the rishis said this. So Arjuna is quoting, like I'm quoting Swami Dayanandi, Swami Shivananji, I'm quoting. I don't say Gajanan says that all pervasive. Because if Gajanan knows all pervasive, he'd be in Ananda all the time. The masters say, so he's quoting them, so they all say that. Devarshi Naradas Tata, and then he gives a list of different rishis, and he gives the historic human ones, like Vyasa, which is the one who wrote this, but Vyasa is quoting. Like if the historian is there, and as the historian is writing down, somebody, he was within the history, he was quoting the history, he or she has to write that down, because that's part of the story, so... It's not that Vyasa says, oh, he said, it's just that that's what Arjuna had said. So the worldly ones, as well as Narada, as well as the, whether mythological ones or the ones that are beyond the earth's sphere, like this. Interesting, Narada, Naram Dadati, that one, which, the one who gives knowledge, he gives jnana. And he is this one system that some do. They cause some mischief, something that causes you to shake up, and then from that can point out the truth. One system that some gurus would do, right? Because it shakes you up, and by that, by shaking up, you want to look at it, helps you to look up. It has to wake you up. Otherwise, it'll just stay in my slumber. So wake you up and now look at something further. And our life does that to us some of the time, right? Some big problem comes. Our world is shaken up. And what happens is, if we're smart, we'll look into it and we'll see, hey, what seemed to really be solid, permanent, what really seemed to be how things are is not. That's not how it is. But then, usually what happens, people then try to hold on to something else. Like this. Like in my guru's words, he would say that we have some mold we hold on to. And once in a while that mold gets cracked or broken. And that's a great time to introspect, to look beyond it. But very quickly we try to hold on and create a new mold and hold on to that. And then I want to find a worldly support for it. And I lose that opportunity when it's shown to me. So Narada helps to shake things up for me to look further if I'm wise enough. So Naram Dadati gives the knowledge in that way. Svayam cha eva bravishi me, and you yourself are now saying this to me. You yourself are saying the same thing, that this is that what you are, the reality, this is the reality. You're also pointing that out to me. So prepare the stage nicely, Arjuna, for his question. A little bit more he'll discuss before the question itself. Just this has taken so much of the time. Sarvame tadritam manye yam mam vadasi keshava nahi te bhagavan vyaktim vidur deva nadanavaha. O Krishna, I consider all this which you tell me to be true, because neither the gods nor the demons know your manifestations, O Lord. So I see all this as ritam. What happens, there's rita and satya. Ritam, satyam both mean truth. When both are used, then satyam would mean the relative truth, meaning what I saw, what I heard, what I experienced, because that's the relative truth, right? Like if I'm a witness, they call you, ask you to witness, say what you saw, you say what you saw, that is being, that's satyam, right? Satyam vada, this satyam vada dharmanchara, this is in Taittiriya, the instructions given. When it's given that, at the end, the most important after that, it says, okay, do all of your duties in life, work, raise family, do your daily worship, do these things, but all the time, keep with the text. You don't stop the shravanam mananam, don't keep away from that. That's what it says after. But in any case, so that's the satyam. Rutam is the absolute. Not the relative truth, absolute, what is the truth. Like for instance, I experience different things because of gravity, but the law of gravity is the universal thing. That's not, you know, that's how it is. I understand certain things in math and can maybe teach to, you know, the high school kid or whatever. College student, maybe I can't anymore, right? My grandson now. You know, in some advanced classes in college, he'll have to explain to me, I'll try to have to understand what he's doing with it, like this. So this one, but absolute, what really, the math itself, there's some universal things there, that's how it is, whether we know them or not. So the universal. So here, what you're saying is the universal truth. This is, and we say what the Upanishad is pointing out is the universal truth, the Rishi, in some way pointed out. The words themselves are pointers. This is a very important thing, because otherwise we take the word and make a concept out of it, and then we think I can hold the truth, store it someplace in my mind, now I'm holding on to it. But the thing is, they're very potent and good pointers, but then I have to follow the pointer, like this. Like this famous story of one of the teachings of the Buddha, when one, because probably every evening, whatever, they used to have their satsang with him, the disciples. So one day he just was pointing to the moon, right? Just pointing, that's it. So, like Dakshinamurti in silence doing this. So the Buddha didn't do this mudra, Jin mudra, he did this mudra, pointing mudra. Anyway, you're holding it in some mudra, probably some, I don't know even there's a name for the mudra, probably. So pointing, in order, his whole teaching was, don't take the teaching as the end of it, but the pointer. I'm pointing to the moon. You want to look to the moon, not to the finger, like this. So in this way, saying what you're saying is ritam. It's the absolute truth, the pointer to it. Because if Shrikrishna said, now I put it in my mind, done, I know the truth, right? Like a lot of times they say, this is the God. This is the God, you pray in this way, you go to the heaven, that's the truth. Okay, that's the truth. This is the God, that's the truth. Did I look into it? No, I believe, I accepted it. I belong to this faith. It can have its positive things, but that's not the absolute truth like this. So, I take this as true, right? Yan mam vadasi keshava nahi bhagavan vyaktim viduhu devaha navaha. That even the asuras and the devatas don't know your essence. They don't know. At the beginning of the class, we chant that one verse from the Gita Dhyanam, which says, sarvo upanishado gavaha, that the essence is the Upanishads, and Shri Krishna, like milking from the cow, right, has taken the essence and is given to Arjuna. So here, very interesting, where the devas don't know, they don't know your manifestation, your full manifestation, what your essence is. That one is, that same thing is told in a story form in the Keno Upanishad. In the Keno Upanishad, first two sections are the teachings. Then two sections are story, like Puranic story, in order to point out the teaching. And there in that story it shows the devatas didn't know the essence. What happens is the devatas won the war against the asuras, and so they're having their big festival. Like here they have a big parade, right? Big festival, we won, and they're all getting their honors, and they're giving their big speeches, and they're feeling so great that we did something. But the thing is, they didn't know, they were taking it on themselves, didn't know that this is manifestation of the glory of Ishvara. Right? Their ego was, their pride was going up. So Ishvara came to teach them a lesson there, but Brahman came to teach them a lesson. That's how they have it then in this Upanishad. So appeared as a yaksha, some sort of form, which actually doesn't even say the form, which is interesting, because it doesn't matter. Something that caught the eye, some presence was there. So then what happens is they say, okay, Agni, you go and find out who this yaksha is. When Agni goes, Agni is just spellbound. Agni goes all fast, yes, I know who this is. But then, kind of like the jaw drops, doesn't know, you know, is totally spellbound. When you see a true Mahatma, it's like that. You just don't know. You're everything's blown away. I remember when I was used to be in our center in New York, and Manhattan, we used to joke, call it Madhattan. When I was there, maybe as a kid I'd gone to that, I don't remember it. When I went to a yoga teacher training course, I came from Israel, went to upstate New York for the course in 1989. I went. After the course, I came to New York, spent a few days, visited some family friend there before going back to Israel. When I got to Manhattan there, I was like, this is the craziest place. I couldn't believe it. And lo and behold, I was sent there to be staff there. So I was in that place like this in Manhattan. So after being there for a few years and I was in charge of the center, I was just so busy. And so I just was thinking, what in the world? This is too much. I can't take this. Then every 2-3 weeks on the weekend, we used to go the staff up to the, like here the yoga farm, there's the yoga ranch. So there's Shivananda Ashram. So I went up there and I didn't know Swami Vishnu was there then, that he'd come to the ashram. So I came there, I got there, my mind was so busy and everything. I got there, his secretary, she took me into the room, he was there, whole mind, everything gone. Like this. Because when you're in presence of Mahatma like this, all the stuff is just in the surface of your mind. You're with them, it just takes you to something deeper, all that is gone like this. So this Agni comes to see who this yaksha is, who this Brahman is, goes, and just all his thing, I'm this great, I'm going to find out whether it is all gone. He's dumbstruck like this. So in this way, none of that, what happens, he tests the ego, he says, okay, what is your power, what can you do? Oh, I'm Agni, I can burn anything. So burn this one twig. He couldn't do it, he tried very hard, so he quietly went back and said, no, I couldn't find. They asked him, no, I couldn't figure out what it is. So this way he goes, and Vayu goes. They can't figure out what it is. Then Indra goes, when Indra goes, because Indra is even, has extra ego because he's the head of everything, right? When you're in charge, you get extra ego. That's why we have to be very careful with that. They're extra, we have to be careful. That's why actually, at least in the old time in India, is that the king was there, but the king would go to the rishi, have the rishis to go and get the advice. So the king also had to be humble. And Modiji has done, Swami Dayananda used to go to, and there are other gurus he goes to keep this, which is a very good example like this. You know, or at least in modern times, having experts in certain fields has to listen to them, then at least, you know, I'm not the all-knowing, all-powerful. That's a better way. But in any case, so the yaksha disappears. Right? But then what happens is Indra decides, hey, I want to find out what this is. I really want to know. He had the forbearance to stick to it. Where the other ones got to some difficulty and left, right? Ego got shaken. My ego gets shaken, I want to hold on to it. No, he wants to look further. So he had that forbearance to stick to it, so he stuck to it. When he stayed there, then some lady came. Lady was Uma Devi. Right. Meeting Saraswati Devi came. Because he had the jignasa, wanted to know, then he learned from Shastra, learned from the Upanishad, who this was. This was Brahman. And then he knew, like this. So in any case, so here, even the devas couldn't know who... Can't know. You can't know. The moment you're some limited thing can't hold on to the unlimited. So he says, what you're saying is true, and that can't, I understand, that can't be just held on to. How am I going to hold on to that thing? That's why he's going to ask him pretty soon, well, give me more examples how to see you within, give me all the examples how to see you behind things, because otherwise, how am I going to hold on to that? How am I going to see her behind everything if I don't have some good examples? This is for upasana, because jnanam is subtle. So for upasana first, to learn to see the God behind the different things, okay, then will be easier, right? That's why aneka rupa ishvara helps to go to arupa ishvara. So saying this. And of course here the devatas, they're sattva pradhana. The mind is more sattva pradhana, like this. Where the asuras are going to be more tamapradhana, right? Or rajopradhana. That's why even the devatas, if the devatas with a much more pure mind can't see the God, how can even the asuras think of it? Right? Like this. So preparation needed, but even then, very hard to grasp, like this. In the Kathopanishad, when the Chiketas is asking the question to Lord Yama, what is there beyond the cycle of life and death? What is that? Then what happens is he tests him, tries to both discourage him and to offer all sorts of other alternatives, right? All the other, you can enjoy anything else you want instead. And he said, why are you asking for this? Even the devatas have a very hard time knowing this. So why is something so difficult? Such a young person, this, find something, you know, go for something else like this. So of course, Nachiketas being such a great jignasu, he says no. Because if the devatas have a hard time to find it out, that's why it must be something so deep and valuable, so that's what I want. And your Lord Yama, you know the border of life and death, you know it's beyond them, so I want to know that alone, like this. So when something harder to know, more should be more encouraging. Yes, that's what I want. Why should I know the simple thing everybody knows? And somebody like you in front of me, that's who I should ask, right? I've heard from a number of different gurus like this that teach these things. They say most people, they come to me, when they come personally to me, they come, oh, my wife or husband, this problem, my daughter, this thing, that thing. Very few are coming to say, you know, yes, you talked about these points, but this one, can you make more clear? I really want to understand. So I get to know, I want to know what's behind all this. Very few come with that. Even people coming for Vedanta class so long, like this. So very subtle, so hard to know. Okay. So then. Swayamevatmanatmanam Vetatvam Purushottama Vetatvam Purushottama Bhuta Bhavana Bhuteshaha Bhuta Bhavana Bhuteshaha Deva Deva Jagatpate Deva Deva Jagatpate. Okay, English, sorry. O Krishna, the creator of all beings, the sustainer of all beings, the god of all gods, the protector of the universe, you alone know yourself by yourself. So what better teacher he has there in the Kathopanishad than Nachiketa saying, what better teacher do I have to know than you, than Lord Yama? One who knows, right? Who knows the two sides, life and death, so knows what's, you know, what's in and through these, what's beyond. Here, Arjuna said, I have you, Shri Krishna himself in front of me, who better to for me to learn from? You're the one who knows yourself, you yourself, you know, because it's yourself. Atmana Atmanam. But this also, the only way you can know yourself is by yourself. This is also. So who is a jnani? Like this, knows themselves by themselves. I know myself, but I know my body. I know my tendencies, some of them like this. I know some of my potential. I know my thought patterns. I know some of my emotions, all these things I know, but I just know this one. Now with these, I can't go and know the self. That's why the viveka is in the intellect, but the viveka isn't going to grab the self. I'm not going to do viveka, and through viveka, my mind is going to grab the self and I'll hold on to it. Right? Here, I found it. Like this. So it's not that. Viveka will clarify what it's not. And then it's just it'll remove the ideas of who I think I am. Remove the none, then I just am as I am. So one knows the self by the self alone, not by something else. Because if the ways that we know things, pratyaksha, through my senses, I see, I hear, right, I touch, taste, smell, those ways I know, and that's going to be of something that is within the purview of the senses, right? Anything that is through purview of the senses, meaning I'm sensing something, like I see, those are light waves. I hear, sound waves. So it's all movement. The senses, it's movement, right? Some of the time, for like, they want to write about a place where they have catering or restaurant, will tickle your tongue, tickle your senses. Well, tickle, meaning it's change, it's movement. So, okay, so you can't find this through the senses, right? Now I say, well, through my mind. Now through the mind also can hold on to ideas, to concept. An idea, concept, again, it's thought. It's way, it's change. So it can't be. It can't be through pratyaksha or through mind. Paroksha. Paroksha, knowing something but not immediate in front, meaning know it in the mind. So we say this is aparoksha jnanam. Aparoksha, they made it short. Because it's apratyaksha, aparoksha. Not through senses, not through mind. So aparoksha, making it simpler. Aparoksha jnanam. Immediate, not through immediate knowledge, not through a medium, not through medium of senses, not through medium of mind. So you says, oh Shri Krishna, you know yourself as aparoksha. So what we look for is aparoksha jnanam. I remember there's a text, Adi Guru Shankara Raji said, oh, let's study sadhana, aparoksha jnanam, right? Because it's the point said, this is this jnanam, this aparoksha jnanam. You know yourself only by yourself. I am, I know that I am, doesn't need mind, senses, anything. That's what I am. So it says, you know yourself by yourself. So that's why I want to learn from you. You have to please point out to me, because you know it directly. Otherwise, it's what's called the blind leading the blind, right? And then they fall into the ditch. Blind leading the blind, also in the Kathopanishad. All these things are in the Upanishads. Leading, going, that they're just going to all fall in the ditch. The leader and the follower is like this. So this is why you can show me. So, Swayam Eva Atman Atmanam, you know yourself, O Purushottama, right? The ultimate Purusha, in this way. And then, interesting, in Sanskrit grammar, first person is Pratama Purusha, is what we call third. Madhyama Purusha, what we call second person, is second person. What we call first person, they are third person, or Uttama Purusha. Uttama, it's third, but it's also ultimate. So interesting, the difference, where one is first starting with me, one is first starting with the others. But Uttama Purusha, interesting, Purushottama, Purushottama, what is the ultimate self? Well, Purushottama here, this is the, he's saying, O Purushottama, in the 15th chapter, which is called Purushottama, it's there, Purushottama Yoga. So talking about the ultimate Purusha, ultimate person like this. So there, interestingly, at the end of the chapter, which, you know, we'll see after some time, next year sometime, then there, when describing this, he talks about, to point it out, talks about three Purushas. First of all, Kshara Purushaha, and then Akshara Purusha. So Kshara means the material world, because material world is Kshara. It's Purusha, it's the one thing that's always there, material, but it's always changing. Matter and energy constantly changing. So it's there, it's always there, but it's the changing. Akshara Purusha is the potential world. Before the Big Bang, it was all there, but potential state. Potential energy. The potential is also, it's always there, but it's also part of the cycle, because it'll eventually manifest. So he said there's these two, and then there's Purushottama. Purushottama, the consciousness principle, because that one doesn't change. So he's saying, oh, you're the Purushottama, ultimate Purusha, meaning the consciousness principle. And then, Bhuta Bhavana, you're the originator of all beings. They all come out of you. Bhutesha, you maintain all the beings, everything. And Jagatpate, you protect everything. You're protecting the whole world. All of this is you. It all comes out of you. You maintain it. Of course, then, where does it all go when it resolves into you? In this way, as all these three jobs are his. Some people thought that the job is too big for one, so they delegate it to three different ones, Brahmaji, Vishnu, and Shiva. But here is saying, no, it's just the one like this. And actually, the interesting thing is, each moment when something is there, it came into being that very moment. To be there, it had to be sustained. But it's also changing, meaning it's going away that very moment. So they're all the creation, preservation, destruction, every moment it's there, every moment. It's not you can't separate them. So you couldn't separate the departments if you wanted to, because it's doing the same thing. So in this way, you are the ones who's doing all this. And Deva Deva, similar to before, we said the God of the gods. But one other thing here with the Deva Deva is the Deva is also the senses, because the senses are they shine because they bring the eyes, bring the colors and forms to light. The ears bring the sounds to light, right? The tongue brings the taste to light. Imagine that one doesn't work like this. That doesn't come to light. You can't shed light on it. Somebody we know now, must be 30, has kids, married, everything. When she was like 10 years ago, 12 years ago, then there was a hit and run case. She was hit and miraculously she survived everything. But for a while her sense of taste was gone. She had to eat because she had to eat, but she couldn't taste. Imagine that. So that devata was disconnected, fortunately got connected again, everything like this. So here, so these are the devas. The mind is also devata, right? But the deva deva is the one behind all of them, right? Like we have the lights, I have the computer on, We have air purifier, we can put on the fan, all these things, but who's behind all the electricity is behind all of them. So the one who's behind the mind and the senses is the consciousness principle, is the Deva Deva. Universal principles same, as we said before. All the other, the universal principles, all the universal principles there, the one eventually behind them. The one thing behind is the Deva Deva. Oh, you're the Deva Deva, you're the whole world. Everything comes out of you, you sustain everything. This is who you are. Again, he's praising Shri Krishna and giving these examples of what the Devatas said, so that then he can start now, that all this preparation, all these things he's brought up, now he'll ask his question. But we'll have to be patient because he's going to ask next week. Because the time is time. We're living in the world of time, but the class is in time. Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Very good. I thought we'd already start with Krishna talking, but Arjuna had some interesting things, so we'll continue next week there. So have a good week. We'll continue.